watcher that control. Show us a beautiful sight.
Turn your eyes to the skies. It's time for Spaced Out on 95BFM. Thanks to Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
Good morning, David.
Good morning, Elsa. I feel like I'm in space already.
Right? It's very atmospheric.
Very good.
How are you going this morning?
Oh, not too bad.
That's good to hear. Okay, so you always send me this list of topics,
And
the beginning one is saying mission to the sun.
Yeah.
Who's going to the sun?
No person is going.
That's good.
No. A bit too toasty.
I would think so.
This is announced last week. It's a probe that's going to go closer to the sun than any previous one. There's been a spacecraft that's gone to Mercury, the messenger spacecraft that orbited Mercury for a couple of years, and then in this mission, so it got pretty close. Another one called Ulysses, who went above and beneath the sun over the north and south poles, but that was much further away. This one's going to go much closer than Mercury. Mercury is 46 million kilometers away from the sun. This probe's going to go only 6 million kilometers from the sun.
Wow.
So the sun's going to look to that probe 28 times bigger than the sun we see in our sky. It's going to be huge, and it'll have 520 times more energy from the sun than we feel here. So it's going to be very much a toasty mission. But when NASA makes these announcements, they sort of underscore the fact it's going, and so on, it's going to go next year, and that's when the launch is. What they really don't underline is the fact that it won't actually begin its research when it gets close enough until 2024.
Oh, yeah. So is it quite a while getting there?
It is. You could go there quickly. What you need to do is put a whole lot of fuel on the spacecraft, send it towards the sun, burn that fuel to slow the spacecraft down into the right orbit around the sun, okay? But to do that, you've got to take that fuel up into space. So you need a rocket to take the fuel up to take it to the sun. Which is very expensive and more technology and risk and all the rest of it. So what they do is send it sort of towards the sun and then go around the sun, and then it goes around past Venus. And it's going to do that 7 times. And each time it goes past Venus, it'll change the orbit slightly to gradually bring it into the orbit they want close to the sun. It's going to go 7 times past Venus to do that, and it won't actually begin until 2024. So, you know, with these missions, often they are a very long time coming. I mean, the one that went to Pluto took 10 years, so, yeah.
Interesting. So I'm assuming that's a sort of a clever, more efficient way to get it there.
It's the only way, given budgets and mm-hmm. practicalities. That's right. If you want to do things using chemical rockets, the fuel is heavy, it's not as efficient as you really want, and you need a lot of it. And to get the fuel into space in the first place, you need a rocket to take it up there. So you need fuel and a rocket to take fuel into space just so you slow down at the other end. It's a no-win situation.
Cool, though. So, but look forward to that in a few years, hearing about...
Yeah.
So that's the closest we've been to the sun.
There'll be updates each time it goes past the sun and around Venus, but the actual research part of it won't begin until 2024.
Cool. Okay, yeah. Let's move on. Asteroids and alien star.
A couple of years ago, in 2015, a star was found that was changing brightness in a very peculiar way. And people were trying to figure out what was causing it, and one of the most popular theories was that it was aliens around that star that were beginning to build a habitat. So the idea is that advanced aliens would be able to harness the resources in the solar system and the star to the extent that you could even build a shell around the star called a Dyson sphere. And it was very sort of popular idea back then. Because astronomers, they have to look at the long view and not just sort of jump to conclusions. So they didn't stop looking at the star. They've kept on looking at the star, measuring it and observing and trying to come up with other ideas. And the most recent one is a little more natural, shall we say. And that is, it seems like it's like three things combining. A large planet, about five times the size of Jupiter, but instead of it being like Jupiter, just a plain planet, it's got rings like Saturn. So it's got rings around a large planet, and those rings are tilted. So that's causing part of the change. But in addition to that, there's asteroids before and after this planet in its orbit. Now, Jupiter has those. They're called Trojan asteroids. So 60 degrees in front and behind its orbit, there's a bunch of asteroids that the gravity of Jupiter keeps in place. And they just keep on being shunted around the orbit of Jupiter. And they think the same thing's happening with this planet. And that's causing this other disturbance in the light from the star. So if they're right, in 2021, the next light of the asteroid should cause what happened in 2013. So, it seems like there might be a natural explanation for this, but they'll keep on looking, and if it is aliens, I'm sure they will let us know.
So they're saying these things are sort of obscuring or interfering with the light that we're getting from the star. Is that it?
Yeah. It, when you look at stars, the orbit of planets and so on around it is going to be all different angles, but if that happens to be in our line of sight,
yeah,
then it'll interfere with the light coming from that star. So there's plenty of stars out there, so statistically there's going to be plenty of stars for us to observe this sort of thing happening.
Interesting. Again, yeah, we'll have to wait a few years.
Yeah, got to keep the show going.
Okay, moving on to a micrometeoroid.
Yes, well, there's a spacecraft called the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. It's been going around the moon for a number of years, doing good work, and they're always going back over their images and checking them out and so on. And they found one that's been sitting in their archives for a couple of years now. But when they looked a bit more closely at it, they found it's got this zigzag in it. Now, when these spacecraft take an image of something like the moon, they don't just go click. Okay, it's more like a TV picture. It scans across and records that, and then it scans across and builds that line by line down the image. So that takes a period of time, and because the spacecraft is moving, you can't just go click, otherwise it would blur. So what has happened is a little meteor, a little grain of rock has hit the spacecraft, and it's made the spacecraft wobble. The spacecraft's got gyroscopes to keep it stable.
Mm-hmm.
So when it was hit, those gyroscopes then brought it back into line. So it vibrated backwards and forwards a bit. And you can actually see it in the image, this zigzag at the top of the image, and then it settles down as the image was recorded. Pretty amazing that, firstly, it was hit, because it's highly statistically unlikely that it would happen.
Yeah.
Also that the spacecraft survived, because it was probably hit at about 7 kilometers a second.
Wow.
Okay, so it's hit very fast. But given that sort of speed, they think what it was hit by was a little piece of rock less than a millimeter in size.
Wow.
So it's about half the size of a pinhead.
About how big is this probe?
The probe's not very big. I can't answer that question.
But significantly bigger than a millimeter.
Oh, yeah. But it's not like the size of a house.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, something hitting at 7 kilometers a second,
yeah,
which is, about 25,000 kilometers an hour, something like that. It's anything bigger than what did hit, it probably would have done some real damage.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
when do they think this happened? Because you said they've just found the photo, but is it from a while ago?
It was in 2014, October the 13th, 2014.
Okay.
Yeah, so people can have a look at the NASA Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter photos, and there's an article about it surviving a meteoroid hit.
Yeah, I'm going to find that. I want to see the little wobble.
Yeah. It looks fascinating. Now, sort of related to that, there's even smaller things that hit things, and that's what are called cosmic rays.
Mm-hmm.
Now, something like that little meteoroid hitting an astronaut could do damage, like if it hit the helmet or something, the visor. But all the time, there's little particles, little atoms that are going really fast through space called cosmic rays. And they do harm people. They harm us on Earth because they can reach the surface of the Earth. They go through the atmosphere. And they cause mutations and cancer. If you're up in space, then you don't have any protection at all from the atmosphere or anything like that, and so the risk goes up. And so one of the things about going to Mars is, what's the risk to astronauts when they're going to be exposed to all that time getting to Mars and getting back? Because they're going to be exposed for at least a year in deep space if you're going to Mars and back. So they've been trying to figure out what that might mean. And what they've found is that the damage when something like a titanium atom from outer space comes whizzing through and hits a cell isn't just that it causes mutations in the cell, but the cell that's damaged sends signals to surrounding cells. And those surrounding cells then start to mutate. And so it's like a cascade. And so it causes additional tumors and cancers. So now they're thinking that the risk is actually about double what they originally thought. So the real answer is probably going to be they're going to have to figure out a better way of shielding the astronauts when they go on these sort of missions. Otherwise, it's going to be a lot more unhealthy.
Yeah, I remember reading about this as being one of the big problems to solve for going to Mars.
Well, I mean, this is another. The radiation from the sun is the main one, because if the sun has an outburst, it has a coronal mass ejection. That radiation from the sun is very damaging. Okay, but these cosmic rays come from beyond the solar system.
Okay,
these come from elsewhere in the galaxy, and it's not radiation in the normal sense. They're actually atoms.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not
as opposed to being
light.
Waves.
It's actual physical atoms, and they're traveling very fast. And if you've got something like iron or titanium, these atoms are heavy, and so when they hit the cell, they can do damage to DNA very easily. So it's a different type of risk. The solar radiation is still definitely a risk. That's right.
Interesting.
Mm.
More
putting your hand up to go to Mars.
Yeah, well, you know, more complex problems to be solved.
Yes.
But I'm sure, you know, they'll get there. Hopefully, some intelligent people.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to the night sky.
Yeah, we better get on to that. Mars Reiki is back, is the big news, of course, in the morning sky. You need to get up before sunrise. Look very low down in the northeast. Wish the clouds away, when the fog away, because Mars Reiki is very, very low. But of course, every day it's getting a little bit higher as the sun moves away. So keep looking, and eventually you'll see it get up high, somewhere dark, preferably looking out over the Pacific Ocean. The Mars Reiki Festival itself this year begins on the 25th, because we've got to wait for the next new moon. So we're actually at full moon at the moment, which is making the sky bright, but once that's gone, the new moon comes around, then the Mars Reiki Festival itself will begin.
Great. And what do you have happening at the Stardome?
Well, coincidentally, we have a show called Mars Reiki Dawn. Mars Reiki Dawn is the story of the creation myth, the Maori creation myth. It has also the story of Rona and Marama, how the moon phases began. And in between those legends is a full explanation of the astronomical basis for the importance of Mars Reiki in resetting the lunar calendar that the Maori used, and the midwinter new year they have, which makes sense, instead of us having our new year in the middle of summer.
Excellent.
We also have another show, Super Volcanoes, which is really cool, narrated by Benedict Cumberbatch. So Super Volcanoes is on Saturday and Sundays at 4 p.m. Matariki dawns Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, right to the end of the month. That's at 7 p.m. On those nights. So adults, $12, children, $10, seniors and students, $10, and family is $40.
Perfect. Encourage everyone to get along to that.
Yes, and that Matariki Dawn show is absolutely wonderful. It really is. Mind you, I really like the Super Volcanoes one as well, so I'd tell people to go to both.
Excellent. Nice to talk to you, David.
And you, Alice.
We'll talk in a couple of weeks.
Look forward to it.
Bye.
Bye.
Control, we are docked.
That was Spaced Out on 95 BFM. Thanks to Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.